And we're live.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 69 of Fans of Power. I am Joe Amato, and I'm here with my partner in crime, Tyler T-Rex Baker. Sorry, I'm so excited, Tyler. I'm just all these topics. What's going on, man, besides me flubbing your name?
I'm ready to just kick some ass here old school style here, people.
Old school style. It ain't because of me, is it?
Does it mean what?
I don't know. You said because of me flubbing your name. I thought that's why you're ready to kick some ass. You said, I don't know.
No, of all the silly things, it just comes with the territory here. You're bound to screw up something here. And speaking of your screw-ups here, I got a demand about you.
About me? What's that?
The exact quote was, tell him to remove that mask, damn it.
I can't do that. Or, of course, one time I'm going to do it'll be like one of those movies where they remove the mask and I have another mask and another mask. So, yeah, maybe that's why.
That was a demand of Erica, and she also suggested that I'm mean to you a lot on the podcast.
She says you're mean to me?
Says I'm mean to you.
Yeah, well, see, she's...
I think you described it as if it was like a really bad Lifetime original movie, you know? it was just, you know, like this... I can't even imagine. I guess maybe Dean Cain would be playing me in the Lifetime original movie, and I don't know who'd be playing, you know, Joe Amato there, but...
Yeah, I don't know. Oh, so you're going to be the bad Dean.
Co-host on the podcast, you know?
It is. That's okay, man. I know. I know you're pretty rough with me all the time. And
make a really good, you know, Oscar, worthy turd movie, you know, because most of them were, you know, about senseless, you know, mindless stuff. But we could set ours, you know, against the background of the Hindenburg disaster or
something.
Set against the background of the Buffalo Bills Super Bowl flop of 1990. Two or three. I'm trying to reference Naked Gun 33 and the third is what I'm trying to do here.
Oh, is that? Oh, the Arab. Okay, there you go.
The spoof in the Oscars. You know, one woman's courageous triumph over a yeast infection. I think that's up for best picture this year.
I do remember those. That was a crazy movie. Well, I appreciate Erica looking out for me. That's cool. So, there's a lot of different topics. We'll be talking about things from the past, some stuff from the present, other things. First, let me just say that. Been reading this bad boy right here, the newspaper comic strip book from Dark Horse. Oh man, this is awesome. If you guys haven't picked it up, this thing is just, oh, it's fantastic. Because like I said, there's thousands of stories, I think, in this book. It's a big sucker, as you can see, but takes you back to the days when stories were actually, you know, pretty cool. And, you know, you were anticipating, waiting to see what was going to be happening, you know, next month, next week. You know what I mean?
Yeah, kind of something we're not experiencing right now.
Yeah, that's why this will lead up to some good stuff later, because we'll be discussing a fan mini comic, something that's pretty cool. We'll discuss that later in the podcast too, but well, I figured we're going to talk about some stories. Let's talk about the record in the record audiobook back in the day, the PowerPoint Dread, the one that came with, well, Point Dread and Talon Fighter. Now, what was your first thoughts of that book, that story, the record, everything? When did you first experience it?
Just so people know here, I didn't have the record book as a kid. I didn't have I just had the Talon Fighter as a hand-me-down. And the way Joe will have it is if, like, I was just like everybody else here. And I didn't have the record. And I just listened to it today because Joe demanded that I do.
Well,
it just certainly did not influence or accentuate my perception of the story that I already enjoyed. If anything, I'm like, good grief. It's just that there's an abundance of bad impersonators trying to do, you know.
Oh, come on. Wait a second. Now, see, I figured, you know, Tyler, you know, you're the super fan. You'd have to listen to that.
Yeah, I am the super fan here. And you know what? I have heard other, you know, attempts of trying to do He-Man and Skeletor. And this was, you know, it just wasn't, it wasn't as bad as like the Warlords of Eternia story. No. I will give it a pass for at least they were trying, but it still was not.
You know what's different with that, though? I think the Warlords of Eternia, which I'm not wrong, and I hope if there's anybody from the UK that can correct me, I don't even know if that was an official person that was doing that or if that was just a fan who read that.
Well, you're assuming that what sounded like, you know, some 66-year-old guy is sitting there just doing. Is that what you're saying here?
Yeah, it just sounded off. It didn't sound official. It sounded really off. But if that was it, then, well, God, I guess that's what they got. But this one, you know, the PowerPoint Dread, I just, as a kid, you know, like when you're not watching the cartoon and this is your experience of, oh my God, you're hearing, you know, your heroes for the first time, you're hearing their voices and you're hearing the villains. And I mean, I played that record so much on a big old jukebox that we had in our dining room. I used to play it over and over. I just, you know, you just felt like you were immersed in their world. So like you said, maybe while now listening to it, you might not think, eh, the dialogue sounds.
You had a record from this inserted in an actual jukebox at home?
Yeah. Yeah, at home we had this big jukebox that we had in the dining room, and I'm
asking you. You mean jukebox, not a record player, but a jukebox where you punch in A3 and it plays.
Well, we had it was a jukebox / record player. I mean, it was a gigantic unit. It had all the flashes and lights, and we had numbers. But
I'm just trying to make sure you're not hyping this up. Just like, no, I had a typical, you know, record player that you open the box.
No, it was a big machine, and it flashed all the lights and everything. I remember one time when we were all fighting as kids, one of us slammed into that whole front section and busted the whole thing. But at least the lights were still there, but the whole cover piece was shattered. So, you know, we still got our jukebox flashing lights and it still worked, just a big shattered piece. So I guess that was a side rant, huh?
I'm just trying to make sure you weren't embellishing the story here.
No, not embellishing. God, I mean, I'd love that thing, but you have to put that on.
Bad enough, like Joe loves to work in. By the way, did I ever tell you about that video game contest I won that Spider-Man jacket in? Oh, but did I ever tell you about the time that I got the attorney a playset and you didn't, Tyler? Did I ever tell you about that?
I'm always
trying to find some way to work in some of his classic stories in quotes there.
Well, yeah, well, I mean, there's a lot of video game stories, but that would be a whole separate podcast.
And now he's off and running here.
There you go. Here we go.
Put on his Mr. Rogers jacket, you know, smoke up his pipe there, lean back in his rocking chair. Gather around, y'all little children. Let me project my thoughts here as I talk about the days of the, you know,
that's right.
Power game pro.
That's right. Take it back to the old days. But no, so when we, you know, I mean, when I played it, I mean, it was booming, you know, it was nice and it just had that bass and I felt like I was in the world of Eternia. It was just fantastic. But
I liked the story too much and I just felt like the record didn't, you know, I'd heard only a very, very small amount of book on tape stuff as a kid in regards to He-Man. Like, I heard several books on tape, but they usually would play sounds from, like, the Disney adapted movie or something to that equivalent. But that Golden Books VHS tape is probably the only thing that I'm like, you know what, to this day, not enough nostalgia. I feel like they did a pretty good job of trying to do Oppenheimer, Irwin. But it wasn't awful. I just felt like, you know what, I like looking at the story without the record. And I guess I really would only have to be, you know, the same age you were at that time to appreciate it. And I feel like this is one of those things where it's like where people will sit there and say, oh, well, it just doesn't hold like Filmation does or whatever. It's something we've already addressed on here. But I don't feel like the quality was there. Like, a lot of this stuff still holds up, which is why we preach the hell out of it, that it's all still good, no matter how old it is.
Well, real quick, what you're saying about the voices, like you said, the Golden Book videotape, since they were trying to, like you said, do the cartoon voices, because as we said before, they were even putting in Man-at-Arms' mustache to a character who didn't have one in the book before the cartoon. So since they were trying to emulate those voices, at least in this record and this audio, this was something before Filmation was even done, correct? Quotes to it? Because they had
been ran. No, because PowerPoint Dread came out in 83.
Yes, but
that's when the cartoon started. The cartoon came out in fall of 83.
Well, I guess what I'm getting at is, do you think that they had at least maybe the audio and the story written?
Or, you know, I have, this is 1983 we're talking about. I have no idea when the toys would be released throughout the year. There's more than likely this was probably released before the Filmation cartoon debuted in the States and probably before the UK as well.
Yeah, because, I mean, I guess that's what I'm getting to is, as people know from the story, which you can start off with first, but at least one main thing is, there is King Randor, but there is no Queen Marlena, and also they're not doing the reference of Prince Adam or nothing. It's just He-Man with his battle axe and his shield, no power sword, at least for this story. Like, Skeletor is the one that has the energy blade, which looks like our power sword, but,
yeah,
I mean,
which definitely sounds like, I mean, because they did the PowerPoint Dread mini comic, then you've got, you know, the record book, and they're both, essentially different, completely different stories. But they, you know, I was going to say, I think the PowerPoint Dread comic, mini comic is is all pretty much the same thing. There isn't a Prince Adam. There's not a whole lot of Filmation references. So definitely this stuff was pretty much worked on before the cartoon came out. So I will give it a pass in that regard. And I definitely don't want to be hard on the record because, you know, I appreciate it. But when I listened to it for the first time, it just didn't blow my skirt up, so to speak.
Took me back, though. I mean, really, it took me back.
I'm sure I probably would have liked it, but I have no prior experience to this story prior to getting the big compilation of the Dark Horse book. I had a buddy of mine gave me a copy of this. He had like two copies of this exact book with the record, and I got it. And it was nice to have it, but probably, and that was just within the last year. So I just never have come across this story.
Okay.
And so it was, and I appreciated the simplicity of the story. Like it really came off as like a by the numbers fantasy story. And I really appreciated the small things it did in the story. I mean, obviously it's a compact story here, but I just, one of my favorite moments, and we'll get to it shortly, is it's still like as an adult looking back at this story, it's a fantastic short story. It's just, it's fun. It's the essence of what we expect of He-Man without all the Filmation stuff in there. Like you got all your central bread and butter of this story. And this is what gives to us the fans, or is at the time kids. It's I'm rambling too damn much here. So let's keep going with the description here. I've taken too much away from you. So you start off.
No, that's fine.
I just, pretty much, just blew it down.
No, that's right. But well, first, if anything, first tell them who did the beautiful art for this. Might as well let know, because everybody always thinks about the mini comics, but they forgot this man did more than mini comics.
Is it that guy, Alcala?
You what a dork. Yeah, it's Alfredo B. Alcala.
The fan favorite Alfredo Alcala did
The art
story, so.
And it's great to see, because everybody usually focuses on just the mini comics and they forget he's done much more than the mini comics.
And he's all the ones that he's done, that this the PowerPoint is probably my favorite.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
The stories that I think it looks even better. Like art quality wise, I think it looks more polished. Not to take away, because those original four mini comics are just fine. I love those. But there's just,
do you think it's because of the, I don't mean to cut you off, but do you think it's maybe because of like the bigger pages and you can see more quality?
Well, he's given more to do. He's not turning it into a storybook where you got one per page. So he's really getting to flesh out his talent here. So
yes.
It's beneficial, for someone like him. I mean, because eventually he would go on to do the He-Man, the Insect People, the Obelisk, and the Dragon's Gift. So he would get other opportunities, but yeah. This one's just it's really good. I just love all the this too is one of those, and Joe has seen in other miscellaneous memorabilia, is the idea of Point Dread being this far off location, this place that holds this very fast, travel through time and space vehicle. But it's far away, and it's like a battle against time kind of situation. Like it's an important spot for good or evil to fight over. And I love that about the box art of the original toy. I love that in the puzzles. There's a puzzle. What, the name of the artist who did the puzzle, like Faker and Skeletor chasing?
Yeah, R.L. Allen, where he has that up there. Yeah.
Yeah, just that whole idea that we've got to get to Point Dread before the villains do. And it's always a rush. And this kind of, at least builds up the idea that Point Dread is something far off and that it's a big deal to get to it. And it's a shame we never got anything like that in any of the cartoons, the right. Talon Fox is just there at the Royal Palace. There was no Point Dread. Point Dread would be touched on in the Golden Books briefly, the mini comics, and I'm sure probably some of the UK books and other media, maybe even the audiobooks in Germany. But it's a playset that there's something about the smaller playsets about Master of the Universe, like the Fright Zone and the Point Dread and the Talon Fighter. I just find fascinating because of all this story is supposed to take place around these small battlegrounds.
Yeah, you know what was cool about this is you know, a lot of people always want to say, hey, the Filmation cartoon, that was nothing but a commercial for the toys. And in a way, this almost seemed like that's what it was doing, because obviously it came with that, you know, the toy, the playset, whatever you want to say. And like, okay, well, the story basically is, you know, Skeletor's always trying to defeat He-Man. What can he do next? And he figures he will try to, like, wrap him up with invisible chains of duty. Now, here's what's weird. As a kid, when I always heard that, I always wanted to see, it's like, okay, they're invisible, but I was like, what are these chains? When you're a young kid, I didn't understand the context of what he's talking about, because I kept thinking he's going to wrap him up with some magical thing and hold him, and I never seen it in there. But then as you, of course, as you see this, he wants to do some kind of way of tricking He-Man into thinking he did something, you know, well, he will do something bad in a way, but that'll keep him tied up, if you will, with duty at the Palace of Eternia, so Skeletor can get to Castle Grayskull and take over Grayskull, because he knows they're such great distances apart. So he uses Beastman to, like, he says, Beastman, hold up a rock, and he uses his, like, you know, his projector and some image and power to make it look like Beastman appears in back of King Randor with a rock, and then He-Man, like, I think he throws his axe at Beastman, but it's just a wall, and it crumbles down on King Randor, and now King Randor is hurt, and He-Man's got to tend and stay to him there. And then Skeletor, where you start seeing this energy blade again, which is our power sword, at least how it looks to me, but he uses the energy blade to take these ants and make these gigantic ants then that will start taking over Eternia. So he's trying to do all this stuff to stop and keep He-Man there so he can go to Grayskull. So as they're taking and getting these ants to go at bay, we see another cool thing that we've never seen in any mini comic. And some people said he's never been drawn by Al Kala, but you see he was. Zodak is into the story, which is very cool. He doesn't have a prominent role, but Zodak shows up because he knows the balance has now been really thrown towards Skeletor's favor, and it's got to be balanced correctly. So that's where Zodak, like you said, takes He-Man to, you know, Point Dread and the Talon Fighter, which is, it's up on this, like, mountaintop and in the sky, and it just looks, it's breathtaking. So he lets him know that by using this machine, you can get anywhere in Eternia, like in an instant. And so, of course, you know, He-Man gets into it, and He-Man's like, huh, he's like, this is made for two people, I guess I'll have to do it, you know. And of course he zooms to, you know, Castle Grayskull, stop Skeletor, and he, as he goes there, like, Point Dread, or the, you know, perch of it, appears on top of Grayskull. He's like, oh, now it could be here. So that's when it felt like, you know, the toy, hey, you could put it here on Grayskull, or hey, you could just put it over,
yeah,
here.
The guy who wrote it, I'm not sure who it was at the moment here, but they did a good job of trying to tie in the two uses of the toy as a separate battle playset, battleground, and then you could put it as a perch on top of Castle Grayskull. So it was a smart little fun way for, you know, it as an adult, I'm like, that's cool. That was a clever look, you know, way of writing that in there, not just, you know, oh, that's lazy or anything like that. It's
right.
It's just goes to show you that, you know what, these may have been simple kid stories to these guys who wrote them, but a lot of these stories, if they weren't any good, we wouldn't be talking about them today. We wouldn't have gotten them in a big book if they were just garbage and trash and silly and just, you know, can be easily written off. But, you know, these were fun little stories, and these guys obviously love telling fantasy stories. And this when I got this book and saw the image of the Talon Fighter on this mountaintop way up in the clouds. It was just one of these, and it's what this, when Zodak's holding his hand out and presenting, you know, Point Dread, like, it just adds this extra level of imagination and fantasy that this, you know, place is so far away, so high up. I mean, He-Man's having to climb up a mountaintop with his bare hands, following Zodak just to get to this place, which adds to the if there was a story of Skeletor is trying to stop He-Man from getting there, or vice versa, it adds an extra level of danger that you got to climb up this thing by your, you know, by your hands or lift, or, you know, maybe, hey, they care this story, we'd have like the cliff climber or something like that. Yeah. It'd be a fun way to revisit this story with something like that. But it really just kind of adds the danger. It made me think of the fairy tale theater episode of Jack and the Beanstalk, where the beanstalk goes up high into the clouds and the castle is in the clouds. That's what this made me think of, and I loved it so much. I had Axel Jimenez do one of my drawings is of Hero and Triclops fighting Azrog right at the base of the Talon Point Dread and the Talon Fight in the clouds. And I just loved the idea of fighting amongst the clouds on this mountain peak, trying to get to something that's even further high up. I mean, because when you see it, it's further away in the clouds. It just adds to the wonder of the story. Yeah. Just adds to, like, I really wish I had this as a kid. I would have looked at this religiously. And I had, when I did see the Talon Fighter in the cartoon, the one time I did see it as a little guy in Orko's Favorite Uncle, it was like, that's the bird vehicle I have, you know. So had I had this, it would have been so awesome. And it's a great story. This is a story that I would love to see done in animation or something like that. Just a short, simple story of trying to get to the Talon Fighter. I just think it's a fun story. And like you said, it's one of the few times we get to see Zodak do anything in, well, period, because once A3 was gone, he was gone too.
Exactly. I mean, he did his thing. He just had to come in because the balance has been thrown in one direction. He wanted to.
It makes you wonder too why they decided. I mean, for a character that's written as someone who's a cosmic enforcer, kind of not like the Watcher in the Marvel Universe, I don't really think, but somebody who clearly, you know, gets involved if things get too out of control, why the character was never used beyond, you know, well, this appearance here and a few coloring books and
yeah, I mean, they should have book
there. It's,
they definitely could have, like I said, and they should have used him more, because they only used him here as this one big chance to intervene because, you know, Skeletor's ready to get into Grayskull. But like you said, you still never got to see enough of Zodak, because he was there just to go find this mystical place to find Point Dread and the Talon Fighter, and then now it's no longer there because now it's at Grayskull or wherever He-Man, you know, fit to use it. But the other thing was, what was interesting about this is you never seen the sorceress, even though she was referred to or mentioned a couple times, because like He-Man was telling Man-at-Arms in one of the, you know, parts in the story that, well, if something happens, you know, the sorceress will let us know. But Zodak's the one that basically came and intervened, did what we had to do. And at the end, after all the smoke is cleared, you've seen the spirit of Castle Grayskull talking. But again, not the sorceress. And I think even how it ended, because I don't want to ruin it all. Fans will have to...
And I didn't join the record book, you know, the... That was one, just a moment where I'm like, okay, that's cool. Hearing the voice of Grayskull speak to He-Man in it.
It is cool. So you got everything into the story, which was great. Like I said, I don't want to say it all, but if fans want to, you know, enjoy the story so you can see it and hear it, just go to YouTube and type in Power of Point Dread, and you can watch it and you can listen to it and just, you know, you can see it. Obviously, it made you want more, like you said, of Zodak, because we never got him. It would just been great to have him in mini comic. We never got him, but we got him in this, but very short, and he did, you know, nothing except just intervene and balance things out, I guess.
I don't groan at a whole lot of stuff, but I will say, hearing He-Man's joke at the end of the book, you know, let's just say, got the point. I got a million of them.
Yeah, that was, you know, it was a kid thing, but...
I know, but, that's just kind of, you know, I think hearing on the record book is what kind of made me, you know, roll my eyes.
Yeah, oh, I can see.
The record, you know, the audio of is what kind of like, eh. But yeah, everything else is just too good in this to take away anything from it, really. I understand why there's certain fans who really appreciate this era of He-Man, because it's the grittiness of the, you know, the characters. It's not a whole lot of inventions. Like, you know, I almost feel like you could do different animated stories or different comic book series where you'd have He-Man in this era where technology is used sparingly, you know, or everything is forgotten. If you find it, it's a big deal. Then you have like your Filmation, where everything is at your fingertips. You have technology, you have sorcery, you have, you know, science and all kinds of stuff like that. And it's, I feel like, you know, there's room for all this stuff. And I love the gradual progression to kind of getting to where we have gotten, where it's just kind of a big mix of everything. But there's a lot of fun to what the line really originally started. And I'm glad it changed the way it did, because we got a lot of great things. We got a lot of great characters.
Sure.
But it's the simplicity of He-Man I find very charming. You know, it's indescribable. And this particular story is a great way of trying to describe that to someone who may not be as familiar or just remembers it. I'm like, this is what we're talking about, you know, that. And I would probably recommend this, and maybe He-Man and the Power Sword of, you know, the original stuff, like the Alcala stuff, you know, kind of like in the beginnings of He-Man. this and that very first mini comic would probably be my two recommendations for someone who's, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? This whole, you know, why is everyone like this Alcala thing? You know, it's like, well, look at this and tell me what you think, you know? And
sure. And then hopefully they can go into it with an, if they've never seen some of this, an open mind, meaning, you know, some might think, oh, things could be a little too silly because they have Filmation thoughts in their head, even though Filmation had very serious moments in a lot of their episodes too. But if anything, you know, like how you said, when you listen to this, it felt a little off. If you don't want, then heck, don't listen. Don't put, take the audio, put it off, and at least read the story or something. You can watch it on YouTube. Then if you want, listen to it. But this, what it proves is, you don't need to add cursing every other page to make it feel adult or look adult. This was a very well-told story, and it doesn't feel childlike. It doesn't feel like, you know, oh, I'm too old to read this. It's a good story, a good beginning, a good end, beautiful art to look at. It had the whole mix, but it's just to prove, don't think adding a bunch of curse words into comics makes it adult. No, it's just, to me, it feels like it's just lazy, quick write, and just to, you know, capitalize on people thinking, hey, that's kind of cool to hear, when it adds nothing to the story. What's
yeah, it? In a battle, Man-at-Arms isn't taking the time to say, well, you know, He-Man, that's what the ladies say.
Yeah,
you
just
know?
That nonsense.
Mindless, idiotic banter that, you know, that's the equivalent of a stain in the toilet. Yeah, you know, it's just, you don't need it, and you don't need to see it. You don't even need to know that it's there. And you know what? When you do see it, it serves no purpose.
Right. That's what I mean. If it's not serving a real purpose, I mean, what's the sense of even doing it? There's no sense.
Oh, I mean, they're trying to be cute and funny and witty and, you know, oh, man, you know, it's like, I'm with it and I'm down, man. The kids love me and stuff like that. You know?
And they don't. Like I said, it's
a matter of time before we show up at your house with pitchforks and, you know, and torches.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's, yeah,
that's why, like, what people who, you know, write Master of the Universe currently and whoever's lined up next to take over the mantle. You know, I feel like when you, you know, if people want to sit there and say they remember stuff, it's like, look, when you have books like this accessible, you have stuff on the internet with scans of all these mini comics and storybooks. You can do even a Google search and find scans of this stuff. You know, it's come on. It's this is why this line is still around, is for stories like this. It was such a wide variety of entertainment for us as kids that not every toy line had all sure. These storybooks and mini comics and coloring books and cartoons and stuff like that. Not everybody had that. And
yeah.
And this stuff like this is what kept all people who are listening to us as of now, last year, or maybe even 2 years from now, you know, still going and everything. That, you know, we come back to this stuff because of stuff like this. We have so much fond memories of, like, all these great stories and great characters. And,
sure. I mean, it's not only that, but look at the logic.
It does not have to be so complicated mess.
Right. I mean, but look at the logic. Look at all the stuff Dark Horse is putting out. They're putting out stuff that we remembered and we loved because, I mean, God, that was when stories was good. And what do you think? I mean, people are clamoring for this. They want more of this stuff. I mean, when you get this newspaper comic strip book that I just showed at the beginning, I mean, it's been selling like crazy. Every group you go to, somebody's like, look what I got. Look what I got. They're excited about it. I'm not seeing about current stuff because they're not excited about the stories. If they can write stuff with this kind of feel from the past, but yes, adding new characters and something different and a new storyline, but you don't have to add all this modern vernacular.
The time for adding new characters needs to be gone for a long time. If it, you know, you've got entirely too many characters who never got used or used prominently or used enough. I mean, I think your characters like Dragstor and Mosquito, you know, other than their few mini comic appearances, maybe an appearance in a Star comic and stuff like that, to be creating new characters because you feel like you have to leave your mark on He-Man. Because you think, you know, you got something cool. It's like, no. You do not need to be creating anything right now. You've got a whole library of heroes and villains.
Right, there's a plethora. You're right. There's hundreds.
Male,
of them.
Female, human, not human, you know, monsters, locations. You do not – nobody needs to be trying to be cute and reinvent the wheel here. You know, you've got all these just this book alone, let alone, you know, the newspaper book, the art book, if you want to draw inspirations from that. And we're just talking about the current, you know, compilation books. We're not talking about the vast, you know, pieces of other stuff that is, you know, that's obviously available on the internet for people to look at and stuff like that. But just this book alone should be enough to say, look, this pull from this, use your inspiration from this. Yeah. You know, you don't need to be going back and decide, well, you know, Attorney was really, you know, King Grayskull's, you know, condo in the south of France, you know, or something like that. something ridiculous. I don't know. Do not be trying to like try and tie this together, tie that together. You know.
No. You're right, though. As for characters, you know, like, I don't mind new ones. Again, if they want to do new ones, that's fine. What I don't like is, like I said, when they're trying to do modern vernacular or doing cursing or things that don't really make sense, that's not needed. You can introduce new characters, but just go to, like you said, go to the past. Look at what made it right and what made Masters what it is.
Well,
and what
fans love. I'm not opposed to that. I mean, obviously, if you have truly creative minds who can either, you know, draw it or come up with it, I'm fine. But what I'm saying, if you're going to do a brand new series of storybooks, novels, comic books, you know, start off with what people are familiar with before you start getting, you know, creative and like, hey, I want to create a new character for Skeletor's faction. I want to create a new Hordesman. Give people who, you know, give somebody like, I've already said Draxler.
Hey, tell you what, hold on.
We'll get you later on.
Yeah, I was going to say, who we're going to talk about. You know, like, heck, let's just transition into that. Because we'll talk about things that this person and character was in before. And then, hey, maybe how could they modernize or make them better? So why don't you start off? Because basically what you're saying is what we're going to go right into is our character profile of, go ahead.
I'm going to call him that. As far as I know, he is essentially known as this, at least in the mini comic and the She-Ra cartoon. And if there's any other canons where his simple story is any different, then that's fine too. But the creation of Modulok, Multibot.
Yes.
A Hordes character that, Hordesman, Horde member, Horde character, however you want to call him there. Heavily, heavily underused. A great deal. And I didn't become aware of him. I can't even remember when I was aware of Multibot. And it may have been probably the early days of the internet or getting that Lee's Toy Review magazine. I don't recall him being one of those figures where I'm like, what does he look like? That's one figure I cannot remember exactly when I first became aware of him. He's been embedded in my mind so much that I'm like it's hard. I would almost think that I've always known about him, but a character I didn't end up owning until I was in high school, I think. Okay. But a character that, you know, I feel like is all the Hordesmen are very original and unique looking, and Multibot, a robot just like Modulok, with you can create your own. I mean, it's an absolute brilliant toy concept. The character itself looks fantastic. I mean, and of course the classics version. You know, I mean, right here for people, you know what, you know, on listening to us and not watching us, I'm holding up the classics version of Multibot here.
That's a great
figure. It's probably the best member of the Horde faction just on the classics version alone. Modulok's my favorite for obvious reasons. But, I mean, Multibot, it's a fantastic figure.
Yes.
And, I mean, a character that got used so little in the She-Ra cartoon, I think was only given one prominent appearance, one kind of small appearance, and then you've got a cameo in the Christmas special. If I missed anything, the She-Ra fans out there, I apologize. I know that Black Snow is his
main one.
Main one, and then he appeared in Horde Prime Takes a Holiday in kind of a small part as a henchman, but and then of course in the Christmas special is a small part, but a character I'm like, well, you go through the trouble of like Modulok can turn his right hand into different guns and stuff like Horde at using Horde science stuff like that. Well, Multibot can do that too. How is a character that mimics what the Horde Act does and what Modulok does only used so sparingly to almost none?
Such a shame. Yeah, because that figure, I mean, first, you're right. I mean, my experience, I remember when I first got the figure, of course, I love Modulok. Who didn't play with that figure and make just tons of different things constantly? And then here came Multibot, which is a robot Modulok, and they can mix all together, which that is the only Joe Amato picture that has me as a kid with any Masters of the Universe items, is me where I created Modulok with Multibot and all this crazy crap, and is I'm holding them. So I might post that picture up online. Of course, I'll do something with my face, but I'm going to hold that and show everybody. So I made my...
As if seeing the childhood version of Joe is going to spoil the magic.
I'm going to put this mask on it. Boom. See, this is where it all started, was from the Mega Beast. because I made my version of Mega Beast that everybody knows from the William George poster where they showed Majilock and Multibot together and they called him Mega Beast. Well,
yeah, that was so cool looking because he's so tall. Like he's just just a big, tall skyscraper of body parts.
Keep that in mind. Keep that in mind when I show my picture. I'll have to put this up either later tonight or tomorrow. But I mean, the artwork's always beautiful. But that figure, just to play with, was fantastic. And then, of course, we get, you know, his mini comic where it was the menace of Multibot. So we got this. And what's cool and what's funny is about all these versions about Multibot, from the toy to this mini comic to the Filmation version, he always looks slightly different. You know, he never had really a consistent
right look. I mean, there is, I mean, you could sit there and say, and I would buy all three of them.
Hell yeah.
Filmation version of Multibot and a concept of Multibot, which is what's in the mini comic, you know?
Yeah, I mean, all of them are so cool because this one looks like how I used to always say the Majilock mini comic, where he looks a little deranged and smaller. And of course, these things look psychotic too, but they're all different. Multibot could, yeah, he could benefit from having three different versions released and you'd want them all. And what you get in this version of Multibot is, of course, Majilock creates them. And it's in his image with his powers, with his, you know, hatred and anger. But the more he gets blown apart or taken apart, he keeps coming back together, but he's supposed to get stronger and stronger. And he was really taking He-Man, you know, he was taking him to the limits. I mean, he was giving him a run for his money in this. So that's what was cool, is seeing his portrayal. And then what sucked is when he got thrown in Princess of Power, I thought it was okay. It was unique because they were, like you said, not only going with the thing where how his arm can transform into this, his head can turn into a gun, but he would turn into things. Like, he turned into a giant snowplow. I was like, oh my God, Shiro was defeated by a snowplow. Because, you know, how he did it at the beginning, he turned a snowplow and he pushed
off. Yeah. But if people want to sit there and bitch over that one, it's like, you have to remember, if you're watching the story, the black snow is essentially kind of toxic.
Yeah.
You're around it and breathing it in and stuff like that, it makes you really weak. So if people want to sit there and like, man, this is so lame and stupid, man, and then they throw their beer bottle at the TV and break the TV.
Well,
she ever got beat by a snowplow. Like, then you clearly you skip through most of the episode as to like why would Shira, you know, not only just be hit by snow, but a snowplow, a very small snowplow.
Well, she kicks the crap out of him anyways, but
there's some new one in the episode. But
yeah, she does. But what I didn't like, this is what I didn't like. We finally got to see him, and he's smart enough to keep doing all this transforming to this or that. But when she, like, you know, kicked him and then his two heads came off, he was like, oh, wait, watch where you are stepping, because he's walking around without his heads to find his heads, and he's putting them upside down backwards. And then She-Ra realizes, I guess, Multibot's not that bright and, you know, like, tricks him into saying why you're here, what your mission is. So they turned this character into, like, a bumbling dolt, and I hated that they
did it. Yeah, I blame that, and I, you know, it's like not just because, you know, the She-Ra cartoon was targeted towards girls, so we have to lighten things up a bit. But I almost feel like, had Multibot been in the He-Man cartoon, this is the route that he would have gone in season two. You know, or season three, excuse me. If He-Man would have gotten to season three and they had not gone with She-Ra in the Horde,
he would have been bumbling, yeah.
We would have got a bumbling Multibot, because, I mean, you look at Too Bad and Spike Ore and some of the, Mossman and Cyclone, who just weren't treated the best. You know, Multibot clearly is a victim of that with the silly voice. It's not a bad voice, but I felt like Majilock was nailed perfectly and tweaked a little bit in the She-Ra cartoon. I'm like, why is Multibot given such a, you know, a cotton candy voice? You know, it's,
yeah, I didn't like his voice at all. Like I said, it's not
as blasphemous as, you know, like Too Bad and Spike Wars is, where you're just like, oh,
close. God. It was close.
It's close, yes, but I, you know, it's not something where I just like, oh man, I just.
Yeah. It just sucked because, like I said, I liked his look. I liked his unique things that
he did. Yeah, I like the Filmation design where, like, the blue, it kind of looks like a blue toaster, you know?
I just wish he could have been.
The comic is used in the Filmation cartoon. And
yeah, because, like I said, he's real edgy in this mini comic. You know, he's not stupid. You love him in this. As the toy, since you're getting this with the toy, you're picturing the toy being a little diabolical. And then you had to get him turned into adult in the cartoon, but he looked cool. So what sucks is, like, what do you think? Like, you know, let's say the NYP gosh, I wish it would have continued, but it would have continued, and we would have got Modulok and Multibot. What do you think they would have did with them? Do you think they would have went the Transformer route like they were trying in the She-Ra cartoon, or would they would have went more to the toy and mini comic route? How do you think they would have handled it? What do you think would be a cool, you know, modern Multibot?
Because Modulok and Multibot are both portrayed as like kind of pint-sized villains in the mini comics. I think it would go more towards a Filmation inspired, but
a diabolical, you know, like the comics,
maintain the more mature look of the Horde that's the NYP gave, you know, Horde, Leech, Mantan, and Grizzlor, kind of larger than life, exaggerated features. You know, Grizzlor got the massive mane of hair, but he's real tall. Leech is a big Hulk. Mantan is real lank and, you know, gangly. You know, and Hordak's very, you know, proud and pompous. I think Multibot would have been like, I mean, it's.
Do you think they would have went nuts with maybe wires and attachments and stuff
that? Would have, I'm sure, done the initial design of Multibot, and God only knows the, you know, what they would have done with Modulok and Multibot. I can't imagine, because they've just done such kick-ass jobs of reimagining these characters. Like, for me to even try to think of what the Horsemen might do, I'm like, that's like, you know, it's hard. It's because until they do it, I can't imagine it.
It would have been nuts.
I would have thought, what would Jitsu look like? Well, they decided to give him a, you know, not only a big hand, but a massive, you know, metal hand. And, you know, I'm like, Modulok and Multibot probably would have been, you know, big. Well, Multibot probably would have been a big robot. Big two-headed robot and Modulok. I don't know.
I think they would have split them. I think still, like you said, they would have had them gross, you know, a little more, you know, just intense looking. But how cool.
It would have been gross. I mean, I definitely feel like, you know, because Mantana was so gangly. I think Modulok definitely would have been a very creepy, you know, covered in like all kinds of purple veins. And
picture this. Wait, hold up, T-Rex. Picture this. I think this would have been nuts. Is they would have finally let in one episode Modulok and Multibot become Mega Beast, and picture the separation of all of Multibot coming onto Modulok, and you'd see these tubes start going into the skin of Modulok. It just, oh, it would just look gross, but you'd have this gigantic cyborg mutated version of both of them to make Mega Beast. I think that could have been nuts.
That deserves an episode in itself. Like, Modulok is the villain of this episode, working on his own, testing Multibot out in the field. It's like, okay, you introduced Multibot in a previous episode, have him working as a henchman, and then you have Modulok working in the Frighten Zone. I'm like, how can I get this character to merge with me, and we can become something bigger? That's an episode that I want to see.
That would be interesting.
And then he goes out and he's taking on Cyclone and Mossman and Fisto and Buzz Off and Stratos, and splitting apart, becoming a multiple menace, and then coming back together for one brute force.
Yeah, just when you think they were defeated or something. Like you said, maybe they're both thrown or knocked into, like, you know, somewhere where you can't see nothing. And little do they know that now they're forming. And just when they think they defeat them all, the heroes turn and look around. And over this hill, you see this gigantic, nasty Mega Beast form to come to now fight He-Man and everybody and the heroes. That could be slick. And it's what you said earlier. Look at, we're making stories up on the fly. They could do this. They could go from the past and grab these characters and make a cool freaking new story with these characters and giving us Mega Beast. How great would it be to have a story?
Nobody has any business creating new characters. Like, look, there's so much that has not been told that can be told. I mean, geez, just using the first two waves of characters alone, you could do stories for at least a good, you know, 4 to 5 years just using the essential core cast and with good writing. But when you get to using characters like this, like, there's no reason to create anybody new. You cannot come to Joe and I and convince us, like, well, I got a great idea for Brandon. Why would you do that when you've got characters like, you know, Saragis, you've got Extendar, you've got Lizard Man, you've got Webstore and Karate and Geldor and stuff like that? Why the hell does someone need to come along and just, you know, because they think they've got a clever idea. Like, no, you don't. If you had a clever idea, you would be more focusing on a good story. And a story that doesn't have Hordak looking like an old man in this. Doesn't he look like the turtle from the Tootsie Pop commercial, you know? I ain't ready to eat it without biting. You know, he looks like he's just ready for someone to ask him about his grandchildren, you know? I blame this on Jim Mitchell's artwork, you know? Everything else is not too bad, but the way he draws Hordak,
Hordak does look easier.
It's like he's missing his, you know, his dentures are gone or something like that. What's missing about this?
That is a unique look of Hordak. I agree. Every time I see it, it's like his face almost looks like it's melting too. Something in the mouth just always looks off. I mean, it's unique. I still like it, but it's.
I mean, it's not. Believe me, there's a lot more worse. But I've seen this. You know, I didn't particularly like his style for Skeletor, but this Hordak, which shows up again, I think the Warrior Machine, where he looks like, I poop my pants. You know, it sounds like the Pope on South Park, you know.
I never seen that, but I'll take your word for it.
Yes, just for people who may not know, Joe does not watch South Park, has ever watched South Park, and when I quote it from the show, reference it, he's just like, I'm going to be a dancer. So anyway,
I'll sometimes
just whatever steers it away from that, you know. Yeah, but he doesn't hesitate to reference Family Guy or something like that. Or
oh, that's once in a while I'll reference Family Guy, but no, as for South Park, yeah, I've never watched it, and sometimes I even laugh just to laugh, but I don't even know what's happening.
But he makes laugh. Pretends he's.
Yeah, I'm like. Exactly. And then I'm like, what the hell?
He's laughing like Tom Snyder. You know? Tom.
Oh, God. Now
but anybody listening to our podcast knows who Tom Snyder is.
I was going to say, who's Tom Snyder?
There you go.
Who is he? Wait, what's he from?
He was a late night talk show host, I think, I think his show was still on in the early 90s. It came on like at 1 o'clock in the morning on CBS or something like that. What was it called? Like a talk show like Jay Leno and David Letterman, but there was no audience like to laugh at. It was just like kind of a...
Originally, it was the Tomorrow Show because it was on so late that it was like so early in the morning, actually, that it was the next day.
Yes.
But then when David Letterman got his deal at CBS for The Late Show, then he created a show for Tom Snyder called The Late Late Show, which came on afterwards.
Because I remember watching it some as a kid, and then I remember SNL spoofing it too, and I think Dan Aykroyd was making fun of him. So there you go. Fun fact of trivia here on Fans of Power. That's what makes this podcast so powerful, is we give you a lot more bang for your buck.
Yeah, and then I learned something that I've never known because I've never heard of the guy either. So there, I learned something too.
And knowing is half the best. Like Reading Rainbow. We are the Reading Rainbow of He-Man podcast, you know. That's what we take a look. It's in a book right here. How about that?
Oh, my God, you didn't just do that.
Did just do that there.
Well, I'm going to reach down for something.
You know, it'd be fun if we did one of those story times, storybook recommendation segments where, like, you and I are like the kids on Reading Rainbow and recommending, like, check out the mini comic, you know, the ultimate battleground. It's about this, you know, just like they would do on Reading Rainbow. That would be awesome if we included that.
You have to remember to add the line, don't take my word for it. You don't have to take my word for it.
Yeah, Yeah, see, if we had high production value, we would add that to the podcast where me and Joe would be like little kids recommending your mini comic or golden book. That would be so cool.
Oh, shoot. Well, there, so there.
What's the gentleman who does Reading Rainbow? The guy was on Star Trek.
LeVar Burton.
Yes, his name escapes me there. See how great if we could get him to endorse our Fans of Power Reading Rainbow spinoff. I mean, it would be fantastic. And he could do, like, you know, these, you know, I have to go back and rewatch. I haven't watched it since elementary school, but that would be great if we could get him involved in this project there.
I haven't seen that in a long time either, but, well, there went a lot of different side rants, but no, I'll tell you what. So, Multibot, I'd love to see him come back. Love to see something new.
Definitely underrated character. That's a character that certainly, I think of all the Hordesmen, I think probably gets mentioned probably the least.
He is.
I think Draxdor, the core original Hordesman, Draxdor, even Mosquitor and the Horde Trooper get mentioned in conversation or just feel like are addressed a lot more than Multibot ever was. I almost think
sometimes with no Horde symbol, maybe even some people were confused, didn't even know where he belonged, maybe as a toy, as a kid.
Well, it was a fan, if you have to say that, there's no Horde back.
Well, hey. Picture a kid, you know, if hypothetically you weren't watching a lot of the cartoon and you didn't see him in the cartoon and maybe you didn't have the mini comic, if you've seen Multibot, maybe as kids you had no clue if he was a Horde member or an evil warrior, and sometimes that symbol helps. I mean, I don't know. That's just my little theory. I could be wrong, but just a theory for people.
I'm not giving people a pass. If I find out some fan was just like, I didn't know.
They used to be surprised.
I go all Jim Cornette on him, start smacking him around, slapping him in the face.
There you go. Okay. Well, so that was a good discussion on Multibot. Now, the thing we'll do before we wrap it up, we're going to talk about how we're talking about how, you know, there could still be good stories that feel like the past can be modernized. There's a fan out there, his name is Walter Harris, and he's created a story called Hammer of the Gods. And he has this mini comic that he put out, and this mini comic for this Hammer of the Gods is called The Bear and the Burden, or The Bear and the Burden. But what he did is he wrote a story, and he harkened back to the days of, well, what we grew up with the 80s and stuff, of maybe that type of barbaric look and warriors. And he had the an artist named Daniel Spizzani. I hope I said your name right, buddy. If I said it wrong, I apologize. And Daniel, I know he's inspired by Alcala and his style. So, you know, you're getting that in this comic. Even on one of the pages, there's like an homage to, you know, the issue where He-Man left his tribe, you know, and waved back. But, I mean, what you're getting in this story is you're getting references and things from other parts of, you know, other pop culture, but it has its own brand new story of this character. I don't want to ruin it. That's why, Walter, I don't want to tell your story, because I know you're going to have fans, you know, get this, you know, mini comic. But like I said, I don't want to wreck it. But he eventually becomes like this chosen warrior named Punch-Out, which is really cool. I mean, I can maybe even, well, no, I don't want to wreck it. I just don't want to wreck it. I like I said, I gave the cover, I gave it inside, but this shows that fans, they have a love, they have a desire to bring back what we knew from the 80s and great stories, barbaric stories, other things that are just good, you know, fun fantasy or mystical or any type of fantasy story. And they can do this. And this is the kind of person that I'd love to see working on Masters of the Universe. These kinds of fans that can do their own stuff of something that inspired them. And I'd wish that fans like Walter Harris that had that passion could be writing for Masters. But Tyler, you read it too. And, you know, like I said, we won't spoil it all, but what did you think of this mini comic and the story?
Definitely a lot of references to fantasy films, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, there were references to somewhat modern stuff, like three, at least I took it as like 300 references, you know, like the beginning of the book. And then you got references to Conan the Barbarian. You got references to Raiders of the Lost Ark. You got references to Conan the Barbarian. I felt like his character design of Punch-Out looked like Carl Weathers in the Rocky films, where there's certain moments where he's got the fro and the kind of crossed arm look. I'm thinking like it's Apollo Creed, you know, just all fast, all business, you know, no jiving, just, you know, or
Oh, you're trying to do all Apollo's? Yeah.
Where are my Rocky quotes here? Jeez. Anyway, no talking, no jiving, just business. I believe that's it. Rocky too. But I felt like if that's what he was going for, he nailed it with the character Punch-Out looking like Carl Weathers. Plus, we need more Carl Weathers in all of our lives anyway.
Yes.
It was a good design. Was it Azul? What was the name of the villain? Wraith Azul?
Yes, I think, yeah. Wraith Azul, or I didn't know how we pronounce it.
Yeah. Was a good, I like the name, good design. You know, making a point to show, you know, Punch-Out saving, you know, voluptuous women in skimpy outfits. I mean, that's,
oh yeah.
When we think classic sword and sorcery, we need to see women, you know, in, you know, small outfits, kind of like slave Leia kind of stuff, where you look at, you know, the Conan the Barbarian and Conan the Destroyer, the Conan films, you know, women are wearing skimpy clothing and those. I mean, that's what you kind of come to expect to see and stuff like that. It was just fun, you know, stuff, you know, nods to He-Man and the Power Sword mini comics. So he's definitely threw in a lot of I like to assume that people who, you know, are listening to the show and are fans of He-Man in general, you know, you watch a lot of movies, you know, because we're all fans of, you know, science fiction and fantasy and sword and sorcery and stuff like that. And, you know, how could you not pick up on references like that? I mean, you see references like that, you hate, like, hey,
sure,
you know, this guy watches the same stuff as we do, and to see references to those films in a He-Man kind of story.
Oh, yeah.
It's fun. How can you not love it? It just shows you, you know.
I even got a video game reference. He's
living hell out of the guys currently writing He-Man for the last 4 or 5 years. I tell you that right now.
That's what I mean. I mean, he knows what he's doing when he's writing it. Like I said, I got a reference to a video game. I think it's almost self-evident, but I mean, I don't know if he meant to do that or not, but, you know, his character is named Punch-Out, and in one particular scene,
Mike Tyson there.
Yeah, Mike Tyson, you know, I mean, Mike Tyson, you know what's weird is, you know how wrestlers have a trademark move? Well, Mike Tyson is the one boxer that had a trademark move. You get hit with that uppercut, you're done. So I love that there was an uppercut in there, but did you realize, I didn't know, I'm sure other fans can look, but the cover, You see what cover this is inspired by, too, don't you? Of a mini comic?
Gee, I think it's, wait, don't tell me. Eye of the Storm.
No. Check again. I mean, he's got almost everybody.
Dude, oh, I was serious on this. He meant
I thought you were. Okay, wait. Man, no.
Just shows that Joe is so delusional most
of the time. No, it's not He-Man. No, not He-Man and the Power Sword either. I can tell you if you want. It's
are you talking about Vengeance of Skeletor?
It's Dragon's Gift. The Ice Hacker, He-Man, and then.
Okay.
Jeez. Yeah, it's pretty cool. I love it. I mean, so he knows what he's, like I said, he gave
I just really just screwed myself on that, because when I look at it, I'm thinking of He-Man fight. Man, boy, I really screwed the pooch on that one. Good.
That's fine, but it's awesome. So, guys.
No wonder. It's like that. Boy, I just made myself look like, you know, a horse's ass on that one.
No, so if you guys want,
I apologize. It clearly is Dragon's Gate. I keep thinking He-Man and the Power Sword for some reason.
That's no big deal. But fans can go on Facebook, and if they type in Hammer of the Gods, I think we'll go to his Facebook page, Hammer of the Gods Customs, which will show this. It has a lot of information. Go to his page and, you know, like I said, support this guy, because my God, I mean, he did a fantastic thing, and I know he's got more things planned, but I told him, I said, yeah, we're going to talk about it, because, I mean, I just love seeing fans do stuff like this, keeping that feel alive, that what we loved, and transitioning to something else. And it's a great mini comic, and fans, I think, out there who love He-Man, you'll love this. Trust me. Hammer of the Gods, you'll like this. Give it a shot.
Da-dum.
What was da-dum? Now, what did I mean? Was that Reading Rainbows? What happened? I don't know what happened.
I said Reading Rainbow.
Oh, you did? Okay, you're polite. Well, it froze on me. See, we're all worked up. Well, guys, that wraps it up for this episode. So, Tyler, why don't you go ahead, and since we were talking about mini comics and everything, why don't you give a good mini comic to recommend for fans out there to go ahead and read?
You kind of threw me off here. My recommendation was slightly different, but because of that.
Oh, hey, if you got a different one, go ahead. No.
I will put in a mini comic reference. Snake Attack.
Oh, I haven't heard that one in a while. Okay.
Snake Attack, the mini comic that came with Tongue Lasher and Rat Lore, that prominently features the sequel appearance of Extendar, and features Tongue Lasher and Rat Lore as they go out on their own and defeat He-Man and capture King Randor and Queen Marlena successfully, defeat Extendar, and if it wasn't for He-Man and the Stilt Stalkers, they wouldn't have been stopped.
A mighty Stilt Stalker.
But Bruce Timm did the artwork. It's one of the best-looking Skeletors of the entire run of mini-comics. Bruce Timm's Skeletor in this particular mini-comic. Just this one. He's drawn Skeletor several other times, but this particular Skeletor is very menacing.
Okay.
And, I mean, the first two pages alone are just absolutely stunning. Just beautiful artwork. And when you look at NYP and you go back and look at this, to see Tongue Lasher being the more dominant of the two Snake Men, and Tongue Lasher's quiet. I mean, Tongue Lasher is the dominant. Rattlore is the quiet one. He just follows Tongue Lasher's lead, essentially, and lets his rattle kind of like to signal, hey, he's getting ready to attack kind of thing, which was a fun dynamic that Tongue Lasher's a braggart. That's what Skeletor calls him in the story. Someone who's like, we can take He-Man. We can do this. And we'll get King Hiss's, you know, badge of honor for this. And we'll show you, Skeletor. You know, we'll put you down. It's just a fun story. There's some beautiful artwork of He-Man on the Stilt Stalkers with Extendar standing in the swamp waiting on Rattlore and Tongue Lasher. It's just one of those cool images I always loved as a kid. He-Man on the Stilt Stalkers getting ready to duke it out with them. So that's my mini comic recommendation. And, something I was I talked to Joe about earlier this week that I wanted us to do at some point. I'll start, you know, sprinkling out here. Or epic moments in Masters of the Universe. Now, I know as fans, you know, you may have, you know, certain images, certain scenes, certain sounds and things like that that get you super excited, you know, still to this day, or you remember it exciting you and stuff like that. And there's some stuff that I'm like, I saw a lot as a kid was kind of like, forgettable, but as an adult, I'm like, this is so much more exciting. And my epic moment for this episode is He-Man going back into the castle of Lord Tyrann and Lady Valtira to save Sago. And it's just as the castle's falling apart, you know, the He-Man music's kicking in high gear, and Tyrion runs in to save Sega. Can't get him out. Sega's, you know, looks like he's crushed underneath this large, you know, piece of concrete, this little dragon. And He-Man runs in and he says, "Here, let me give you a hand," and gets him out. And he says, "I'll meet you outside. There's one last rescue I'm going to want to make." And the music's, you know, building and building. And he's going back to save this snake that he fought. And
just, that was in the big bag? Is that the one he wrapped in the tarp or something?
Yeah, he wrapped up in the big curtain there. And there's something about He-Man doing the Boy Scout thing with, you know, the music kicking in. Everything's coming down. It's exciting. He's just like, man, He-Man's such a badass, you know?
Yeah.
He's calm and collected. You know, I helped you. I'm going to go help somebody else as this castle's getting ready to fall to pieces. And, you know, it's just shows you that, you know, it may not be a big deal to a lot of people, but it's just one of those moments when I watch Sleepers Awake, I'm like, this is so cool. I just love watching He-Man do this kind of stuff.
Well, that is what's cool, is because you forgot all about that creature. You didn't, you know, it was, that's what
yeah, about. It was a nod. I mean, it's like, as many creatures are kind of thrown to the side in the He-Man cartoon, Douglas Booth, who wrote that episode, and I know that Filmation was all about, we don't want to put the image that we've harmed animals, so that's why they'll fall into water, fall into snow, or something like that. But to make a point that He-Man says, there's one last rescue I want to make. It's like it's not just thrown in to like, oh, look, there's a reference. The snake went out the back end real quick. No, He-Man went and grabbed him. Up we go, big fella, and carries him outside. It's like just such a badass thing to do, you know? It's a great kind of Superman moment. I just love that. So that is my epic moment for this episode.
And that was a good one. So that was your epic moment in Masters history. So
there we go. And hopefully, you know, like we'll get to do more of those. I'd definitely like to do them each episode. Is for people who don't know what I'm talking about, you check out the episode Sleepers Awaken. And if I reference a golden book, check out that golden book. I'll just talk about one particular moment. And this same thing goes for She-Ra, New Adventures, NYP. You know, I got some NYP moments that are very exciting to watch now, and we'll get around to all those. Maybe even do an episode on it.
Exactly. Yeah. So my epic moment for NYP would be when King Grayskull was shown. But okay, well, until I get that,
it will be to, you know, smash your head clean out of your ass.
All right. So well, as for me, go to fansofpower.com, go to popculturenetwork.com, go to hemanworld.com, and on Facebook, go to Masters of the Universe He-Man and She-Ra Ultimate Fan Group. All great places, all great people. So until next time, have a powerful day.
Hey, let's face it. If they were taking care of business, I'd be out of business. You know what I'm saying?
10-quote.
Bill Paxton, and to celebrate the man's unfortunately passed away today. Not to date this episode, but I love that man to death. I know he's got a tremendous fan base. I just want to honor this beloved actor. It's a very sad day. And Private Hudson, you will be greatly missed.
Yeah. All right.